Thank you very much. And I want to begin by acknowledging what we are all aware of, that we're living today through a profoundly revelatory and shocking moment in our nation's history and the history of this administration. After one very exciting first year of the second Trump presidency, I'm sure that all here agree that we are living in the best economy in the entire history of the cosmos, not only on this planet, but on all the planets of our solar system and all the exoplanets of every other solar system.
Amen. Preach it.
No, I'm disappointed. The beatings will continue until morale improves. But to frame a session on as a scorecard on Trump's presidency or any presidency is a form of scholarly clickbait. Economies do not turn on political personalities, not even those as colorful, erratic, and occasionally vicious as Donald Trump. I am sure my distinguished co-panelists, having achieved one goal by luring you into this room, will direct our attention at least as much to the deeper circumstances that face the country and the administration, recognizing that Trump and his minions may not themselves have fully grasped, or at least initially, what they and we are dealing with. In a nutshell, and it is hard to put all of this stuff into a nutshell, the past decades have seen the end of European empires, the fall of the USSR, and the recovery of Russia, the rise of China. The world's five largest economies in purchasing power parity order, according to the IMF, are China, the United States, India, Russia, and Japan. No European country makes the list, or the European Union, I've taken as a whole, would. After having globalized in the second half of the 20th century, the world's energy map is now largely regionalized once again, the Western Hemisphere in one group, Eurasia in another, the Middle East and East Asia in a third. Information technology map is trans-Pacific. Military technologies have evolved to give overwhelming advantage to the defense, to drones and missiles over tanks and aircraft carriers and bases. If you must fight at all, better do it on or very near your home turf. For these reasons, the Eurocentric revivalism of the previous administration, our traditional alliances, if you will, is a dead letter. World power, therefore, has also shifted. Russia will prevail in Ukraine, eventually achieving all of its military objectives. China has prevailed in the trade battles, and the material conditions ensure that it will continue to prevail. The U.S. energy frontiers are Texas, Canada, and as we saw this morning, Venezuela, not the Persian Gulf any longer, as the new national security strategy document states clearly. These are the realities to which different parts of the Trump administration are adjusting. They are realities to which any administration would have to adjust. They are not within American power to change. They supersede the ideological framing under which U.S. governments have functioned since the 1990s of a free market world order globalization led by America and NATO. And just in time, by clinging to that framing well past its sell-by date, the previous administration brought us to the brink of world war. And bad as things are, it is possible that if they'd continued along those lines, they would have gotten worse. The ideological incoherence, blarney, and bluster in some areas, brutality of the present administration stem from the fact that there is no politically happy way to present the present realities to the public. That doesn't make them any less real. The administration uses tariffs mainly as a political tool for a variety of goals, balancing trade is among them for public relations purposes. Is my microphone not working? I'm sorry, back there. I'm doing the best I can. Rather than a serious policy. The main economic consequence will be to attract some European industry to American shores. After several aggressive starts, The tariff truce with China keeps rare earths and gallium coming in. It will be reviewed and presumably renewed next year, as there is no alternative available and will not be. So Chinese terms on essential matters will have to be respected. The posturing toward Canada, threats to Mexico, and the aggression against Venezuela speak for themselves. Bullying and violence are mainly aimed at the close and the weak. Russia's victories will be acknowledged, and for the most part, when the dust settled on the present course, that country will be left alone, at least by the United States, if not necessarily by the British and the Germans. Politically and economically, not to mention culturally, with the obvious overtones of that word, to this administration, Europe is a lost cause. Within these realities, the United States economy is a pastiche of three dynamic elements: an information technology sector driven forward by a massive building boom in artificial intelligence data centers and governed by a handful of oligarchs at the peak of a small number of extremely highly capitalized companies; an energy sector sustained by the effervescence of the Permian Basin, which is now producing at levels that are unprecedented in US history; and a living standard largely supported by the dollar and the reserve asset function of US Treasury bonds. These are significant, even great advantages compared to Europe, which lacks a viable energy base or much of a technology sector, and is doing its best to destroy the second tier reserve asset status of the euro over the sensible objections of Monsieur de Weaver and Madame Lagarde. These US advantages may last through Trump's term, maybe not, they might come to an end this year or next year, but whether they last through this term or not, they do not seem wholly reliable, that is a stable basis for sustained prosperity in the long run. For the long run, if anyone is interested in thinking past the next two elections, assuming they occur, there are several imperatives for better policy and prospect. The first is to redirect the $1 trillion we now spend superfluously on the military and its industrial base towards civilian infrastructure, human development, and sustainable, I don't mean green, but sustainable energy. The second is to reconstruct a public sector capable of challenging, regulating, and eventually replacing the present controlling wall of global finance. Demilitarization and definancialization should be the watchwords of a new political economy. A serviceable defense can be built on a much smaller resource base. The financial sector that we have is a predator on the larger economy and a perversion of public purpose. As for industry, I do not think America can rely on second-tier European companies seeking refuge from tariffs and their own intractable problems, nor can we deglobalize in most industries or their critical components. The reality of the semiconductor supply chain is that without global specialization and division of labor, the industry as we know it would simply cease to exist. The reality of alt energy, electric vehicles, commercial aviation, and much else is similar. The larger the scale, the lower the variable costs, and the better the result. If you want to see what happens when large-scale enterprises are disrupted, revisit the collapse of the Soviet Union or that of Yugoslavia for a refresher course. Sooner or later, therefore, we Americans will have to learn to live with the Chinese as partners, even as role models, and take what benefits we can from their accomplishments over the past 50 years. I don't think this would be very difficult for the American people. It's only for the overbearing elites with their delusions of grandeur and global preeminence. This is particularly a problem. But when you look at them objectively, the creation of the world's most modern cities and transportation networks, a healthy, technically competent population, four times the size of our own, the elimination of deep poverty, plus development projects in the wider world that dwarf anything ever attempted by the West, and almost complete absence of military involvement outside of China's own borders. Take all that together, and it's not such a bad record. We might learn something from it if we applied our attention to it in an open-minded and fair-minded way. Thank you very much.